I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugrupul people, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Nunnakal, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, we're doing an outside broadcast for Let's Talk today. We're down at the Royal on the Park. We're in Brisbane on Alice Street opposite the Botanic Gardens. And this is the venue for Brisbane's first Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander birthing summit. And that's brought together a number of stakeholders, the Mater Hospital, the Aboriginal Health Service here in Annerley Road at the Gabba, Quake, the Queensland Aboriginal Islander Health Council, IUIH, Indigenous Institute for Urban Indigenous Health, and the Queensland Centre for Mothers and Babies. A number of people speaking at the conference, and to start off with, here on air, we have our first guest. We've got a number of guests coming in, of course, including the Minister for Health, Lawrence Springbull. But my first guest is Professor... I've got to find all my notes. Professor Sue Kilday. And Sue is Professor of Midwifery at Mater Health Service and the Australian Catholic University. Sue, welcome to Let's Talk. How are you?
Oh, look, I'm great. Very, very happy to be here. Thanks.
Well, thanks for coming in and telling us a little about the issues at the conference. Now, you've got a long history of working with First Nations communities in this area.
Yeah, I have actually. I think since the early 80s, actually, I first worked out in... my first ever remote community was Arakoon up in the Cape. But most of the time I've spent working in the Northern Territory and a lot of the remote communities in the Territory and the Kimberley across in Western Australia. So it's my first love and my first passion is working in remote maternity.
All right. And... it's a long time since you first started that, I would imagine. When you were in Arakoon and places, it would have been some years ago.
Oh, it certainly was, yeah. It was an eye-opener. I was a nurse and then a midwife who'd worked in the city. So I'd never worked out bush and I was a city girl. So going out bush was just amazing for me. I learnt so much. I've been really lucky. It probably happens to everyone, but I've had really strong Aboriginal mentors at every community I've worked at and I've learnt so much, often by trial and error, but always having people that are there to teach me, if I listen, if you listen.
What year would you have been in Arakoon for your first time?
Arakoon was 1992.
Amazing place. I mean, the strength of culture and language and the people there, it's just amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it certainly is. It was an eye-opener for me. I just had no idea that there was, you know, these sort of communities were a part of Australia, really, having grown up in Canberra.
You see any changes on reflecting back to your early days going out to bush communities and looking at them now?
Gee, that's an interesting question, really. Look, I think probably many things have changed, but in some respects a lot hasn't as well, which is kind of sad. I don't think we've gone as far forward as we could or we should, and I think there's still a lot more to do.
And these sorts of collaborations with the different stakeholders... birthing in our community. This is as a result of what needs to be done. Is that right?
Yeah, for me, I think, you know, if we're talking about close the gap, if we don't get it right in the beginning, so for those babies that are being born, if we don't get it right back then we're behind the eight ball all along. So we've got, you know, our statistics, we all know them, I'm not going to talk about them, but we've got to move them, we've got to change them, we've got to get those little babies the same start in life for our Indigenous First Nation babies as we do for the non-Indigenous Australians. So we've got to start in pregnancy, and I'm now working in a big tertiary hospital. I'm at the Mater Health Service. There's more babies born at the Mater Health Service than any other place in the country. So how do we make a difference? We can't do it by ourselves. We have to do it in partnership. We have to do it with the Aboriginal community-controlled organisations, and that's what we're doing. We know we can't do it by ourselves, and we've got a steering committee together. We're working with AICS, Brisbane AICS, which is the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Community Health Service, and we're working with the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health. And so the three organisations together came together and said, we want to make a difference, we want to form a partnership, we want to do things differently, and we're prepared to put resources into it, and that's what we're doing. And it's a very exciting time.
It is exciting to hear this collaboration, because it's, well, it's a long time coming, and it's, we've had shortcomings in health outcomes and that for a long, long time. But talking about these sorts of collaborations, there was a Murray Health Clinic as a part of the MARTA services?
Yeah, look, the Murray Clinic was set up in 2004, and it was it's run by Aboriginal midwife. We've got an Indigenous liaison service, and we've had strong leadership from the Indigenous liaison service into how to improve our services. And we did an evaluation of that service and found that it was really well known across Brisbane, had a really good reputation, but everyone thought that we could probably strengthen the service. So we brought everyone together. We had what was called a World Cafe, and we fed back the results of the evaluation to everyone. We had elders, we had women, we had men there, we had community organisations, plus people from the MARTA that work in the large tertiary centre. We got everyone together and we spent the day trying to work out what would we want to do if we could have the best service in the world, what would it be? So we planned it that day a couple of years ago now, and we've come together since then. The CEOs of the three organisations heard what everyone was saying, and they've put their money behind it. They're today actually signing an MOU and a statement of commitment to actually show what we're doing. We've created a new model of care, which is called Birthing in Our Community. And we've got, we've improved. We've grown from the Murray Clinic to, it's the next stage really, a bigger and better service, much more enhanced, lots more resources going into it. It's what the vision was back in 2004.
It's great to see the valuing of community-controlled services, First Nations services. It's just great to see that valuing.
Oh, look, absolutely. And we understand that the governance of our service, if we don't have Indigenous control and Indigenous leadership, then we're not going to make a difference. So that's why we've put the steering committee together. We've got representatives from the three partners are there, and they have overarching control of where we go with this service. And I think that's crucial, isn't it, really?
So there's a signing of an MOU here today. What else do you expect to get out of this gathering today?
Oh, look, today's fantastic. We've got Minister Springborg, who is really supportive of change in maternity services and maternity care. He's really proactive in supporting the return of birthing services to rural and remote areas. He's the one that's actually called for this Birthing on Country Summit to see what we can do Queensland-wide. So we're going to have a lot of sharing of stories today, but there's a real commitment to actually doing things differently and choosing sites for Birthing on Country. So, you know, if we're talking about birthing out in rural and remote areas, it makes everyone a bit terrified. They all get a bit scared and think, oh God, mothers and babies are going to die and we'll get blamed and everything's going to be dreadful. But that's actually not the evidence. The evidence, particularly from the Inuit communities, suggests that we can actually do it. We can do it safely. And we've got the minister and many other people here today to say, okay, where are we going to do it? And let's put a strong evaluation framework around it and make it safe.
When you say Arakoon families, how long have they been? They've been doing it since the first sun rose and shone, those families up there. So, you know, they're experienced in this sort of thing, our people are. But Sue, look, thanks for joining us today. It's really good to have you here, and wish you all the success with the gathering here.
Thank you so much. It's fantastic. It's very exciting. Very exciting for Queensland.
Yes, no, it's certainly good. Thank you very much, eh? All right. That was Professor Sue Kilday. And Sue is the Professor of Midwifery at MARTA Health Services. And also is at the Australian Catholic University. I've now got the Minister for Health, Queensland Minister for Health, Lawrence Springborg. How are you, Lawrence?
Going well. How yourself? Yeah, going really well. Yourself, you're looking well, mate. Relaxed.
Mate, I'm going well. I'm going well, yes.
Now, I note you're the youngest member of Queensland Parliament to come into Parliament some 13 or 14 years ago.
A bit more than that.
I mean,
24 years ago, 3 days ago, Tiger. So it's been a while, and still hold that, you know, very, very privileged record of being the youngest person ever to be elected to the Queensland Parliament. 21 years and 9 months. So it proves that regardless of your background and your age, you can actually enter the Parliament. That's a great thing. It is a representative place, and you know, I was given an enormous privilege.
Yes. All right. Now you've got a big interest in. And a commitment. You made a commitment to birthing on country for in this state. Tell us about it.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm very, very firmly and personally committed to giving women and their families greater choices around birthing, to, you know, to make sure that they feel comfortable, that they've got their own midwife and that you've got that continuity of care. And, of course, to extend that to Indigenous women where it applies equally, but make sure that we commit ourselves to opportunities to enhance the maternity models for them and to move towards the opportunity to birth on country as well, because that's a very, very important thing for Indigenous women. It's about keeping that very important connection with their country and also their local community. All women, regardless of who they are, like the idea of that they'll be able to birth closer to their family and a supportive environment, and I think it's even more important to Indigenous women. But what we've got to do is to make sure that that's safe for them, that we can give them the best possible opportunities.
That commitment was made quite some time ago. Identify the suggestion or the commitment to three sites in Queensland. Where are things at insofar as getting it rolling along, identifying the sites and starting it happen?
Well, look, it was a five-year commitment, and I think that you know me well enough to know that I'm not someone that commits easily to things if I'm not going to deliver. I'm not interested in a token or commitments. I'm interested in commitments that actually deliver. That's why I'm reopening birthing services in places around Queensland which have been previously closed. Bow Desert, Cooktown, for example, continuity of care, building the midwifery workforce out there so we've got enough midwives to be able to support women and to make sure that we've got that continuity of care model. That's all something which actually progresses and leads up to it. I don't want to speculate on where the sites will finally be, only because we've got to make sure that we've got the capacity in those areas. I've had various suggestions to me, right from Palm Island through to southwest Queensland across to the Cape, and we want to make sure that when we do it, that we've got that capacity that's there and it's safe for those women.
Talking about the Cape, those expectant mums, they have to leave their community at 36 weeks, I think it is. As opposed to other states, they can go at 38 weeks. Why do you think that is? Why is Queensland different in that regard?
Well, what's happened over the years, Tiger, is there's been real concern to make sure that women can safely deliver their babies, and of course that particular stage leading up to it can be very challenging. And I think what's happened is there's been something that's creeped into our system, this view that women get the best care when they're taken to a bigger centre. We actually do know now that if they've got a continuity of care with a midwife that they trust and working with their local doctor, that they can get just as good, even a better outcome for mother and baby in their local community. In a place like Weipa, it can be up to 6 weeks before the baby is due. And imagine the disruption in family if there's other children involved, all those sorts of things. So as we're reopening birthing opportunities, we can get that support in community so women, you know, can be supported there. But that's one of my firm commitments, is to make sure that we can safely do it in the community. And we just don't default to this view that the only place you can have your baby safely is in Cairns or in Townsville or Rockhampton or Mackay or, you know, the bigger centres.
Well, I was just saying to Professor Sue Kilday, our women have been giving birth in all the weirdest places under the sun long before colonisation, you know. So it's not, and places like Arakoon, those families haven't moved. Like that, when you go back to their grandparents and people like that, they've been there since the first sun rose and shone. So they must know some of this business.
That is very, very true, Tiger. But if we actually look at Queensland in Australia, has one of the safest rates of maternal outcomes for women and children in the world. Our rates of mortality for women in Queensland are very, very low. Maternal death rates are down around about 10 out of 100,000. Years and years ago, we had maternal death rates that were running into maybe tens in 100. And because things can go wrong in birth, That's the reality. The sad trend is around the rest of the world is starting to creep up. We want to make sure that it doesn't creep up, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to have the most highly complex birthing environment to ensure safety. A midwife working with an expectant mother, a doctor working with an expectant mother can work all that out and saying, look, you know, Mrs. Smith, you know, whatever the case may be, you know, okay, the baby is in a breech position, and it's got a bit complex, all those sorts of things, you may have to go. But with that process, we can say, yeah, you can safely deliver in your own area, or you may have to go away. But the most important thing for us is to work with those expectant mums to make sure that the other factors that can really create an issue, whether they be obesity, smoking, drinking during pregnancy is addressed, because if we can do that, we can address birth weights, we can address complications and that sort of stuff. And that is a particular issue with Indigenous communities, and it's also an issue in the non-Indigenous community, because fetal alcohol syndrome, low birth weights associated with smoking, drinking, that's a real problem for mother and baby, and it's an awareness across the community that we've got to get out there as a part of it. And if we can do that, it also allows us to deliver, you know, more safely in those communities.
You touched on it a minute ago, talking about birthing mothers in Weipa or in Cape York area. The pressure that's put on when they have to go to Cairns, they got family back at home. It puts a lot of pressure and stress even. It should be a time where there isn't, where there's less stress, but there's a time where there's more stress because they're worrying about the kids back home and stuff. What sort of support do you think could be put into place to accommodate these situations? Because not every community is going to have a birthing centre or the facility in their community, so a lot of them will still have to travel.
Look, I'm not going to build up unnecessary expectation. We have to make sure that we've got a safe birthing environment for mums in their local community, and we can't do that everywhere. That's why we're returning birthing services to Cooktown in the Cape. We're looking at Weipa as well. So if we actually then look at birthing on country, if something is compromised, we can quickly intervene to assist that mum. Today, let's face it, everyone expects and wants their birth to go 100% right 100% of the time. The reality of where we've come from over the years, Indigenous, non-Indigenous, there were lots of situations where births just go wrong because of the nature of birthing. I mean, it can be a very difficult situation, and so we want it to go right in as many occasions as we can. But the only way we can do it is to put those services back there, make sure we've got the backup and the support for women in those areas, and that's what we're trying to do, is to build the capacity so when we do it, it's there, it's safe and it's comfortable, and it really is in a place that women have the most amazing experience.
Now, there's a role for dads in all of this, a big role for dads.
Well, you see, father's an essential part of it. You can't have a baby without a mum and a dad.
They cause a problem in the first place.
Yeah, well, you can say that. And depending upon how the child might be reacting that day, possibly the father might be even more in the gun, if you know what I mean. But look, you know, fathers are as equally responsible because, look, let's face it, it takes two to get in the situation of having a baby. It can be a very joyous experience, but it also can be it's a life-changing experience as well, because having a baby changes your life. You know, how something that weighs about, you know, hopefully in the vicinity of around about 7 pounds, but, you know, up towards 10, maybe a little bit lower, you know, can change your life and be around about 2 foot long. It's amazing. You don't know until you've got there. And that's why we've got to have mums and bubs policy, which we've done, where we've got the visiting midwife, the child health specialist that's going out there working with mums, all of those sorts of things. But dad's an essential part of it, because fathers are an important part of actually supporting. And, of course, in the birthing stage and, you know, that stage just after, you know, fathers find themselves more at the front and centre of looking after the family. So fathers, you have just as an important role, you know, even though the women go through the more challenging side of it.
Yes. Aboriginal community controlled health services, you've had some time now working with them, seeing what they do. Some value there?
Lots of value there, Tiger, enormous amounts of value. And they've come from real grit and determination over the last 40-odd years. They play an extremely important part of delivering health services to the Indigenous community. And even in other areas, they've become so good that there are many non-Indigenous people that actually use them as well. And the great work being done under the Indigenous Institute, the Quake, and all of the various member organisations, some fantastic work. Obviously, the Queensland Government will continue to support support. We seed fund them in many cases, but they do need to be successful business models as well, and we're seeing that. But the most important part is it provides care, quality care, in a way that Aboriginal and Islander people can actually relate to in an area, because we all aspire to better healthcare. And, you know, even though we've got to close the gap much more, where we are today is a long way from where we were 100, 150 years ago, right across the community, where the relative life expectancies were even less. Now we've got to close those gaps. But very, very important role. Great work is being done, absolutely. And if you also look at what Professor Noel Heyman does, I mean, he's just doing fantastic stuff, recognised around the country. We've got some amazing leaders with regards to the Indigenous health side. But what I want to say today, Tigers, we can give the best health services, but regardless of your background, your race, your creed, ultimate responsibility fits with the individual about how you live your lifestyle. We can medicate and we can help people give really good quality care, but we've got to look at what we eat, how we exercise, and the other choices we make. And that's right across the community, because about 50% of the burden of disease and presentations to hospital are avoidable illnesses.
Sorry.
All right. No, that's fine. You've got a speech to make at the conference proper itself. So I certainly, unless you've got something else to say, we'll...
Todd, can I just wish you and everyone, you know, your family, everyone that's important to you, and also your listeners, a very, very happy festive season as well, and happy holidays.
Thank you very much, Lawrence. And you have have a great Christmas for you and your family. There's a man that spent half his life in Parliament, eh? Oh, hey, gee, half your life in Parliament. Not bad going at all, is it? For a young man, yeah. The Queensland Health Minister, Lawrence Springborg. He's not a doctor. I think I've got Sue Krusky joining me now. And how are you, Sue?
I'm good, thanks, Tiger.
Tell us a little about yourself. You're director of...
the Queensland Centre for Mothers and Babies, and that's at the University of Queensland. And we've basically got our remit is to do help get information to women and from women about maternity services, and hopefully in the view of improving their care.
How long has that centre been operating for?
It's been around for about 4 years. We're actually coming to the end of this funding cycle, and I've been told that the minister is interested in refunding it, but it'll have to go through a competitive process, and so we're waiting for the tender to come out. It's a really important centre, I believe, because traditionally health services don't actually pay much attention to the voices of the women when they're organising care or delivering care. And yes, the indicators of safety is things on the size of the baby and if the woman had a cesarean or not. But we know for women, actually what matters is how they feel about being a mother and how they're supported and how they're respected. So we think the work that we do at the Queensland Centre for Mothers and Babies really helps to capture that and then give that to the government, but also at a facility level. So we have these reports where we actually deliver to all the small facilities saying, this is what your women said about your service. So again, a really great way of putting the voices of women into the design and delivery of care.
So is your work largely research-based sort of work?
Yeah, yes, it is. It's research and policy advice as well. So obviously that's the best type of research. There's not much point doing research if you actually don't then channel that into the policy arena, but also the practice arena. So, yeah, largely policy and research-based.
What are you seeing with your research as some of the issues or challenges or concerns in First Nations communities?
Well, their Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women's voices are hard to capture. They don't fill out the sort of traditional surveys that we do for mainstream women. So we did do a survey last year where we had peer interviewers trained up from the community. We went to the Torres, we went to Palm Island, Townsville area, Warrabinda, Rockhampton area, and then Mornington, Mount Isa, Doomadgee area. So local women from that community were trained up as peer interviewers, and then they helped the women fill the survey out. So that was a really great way of actually trying to get the voices of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander mums into their experiences of care. And what they told us that largely they were relatively satisfied. But the interesting findings were that they didn't report being given opportunities around exercising culture. So no one asked them, is there any cultural needs that you actually are interested in having around the care? Some women said that they would have liked to have been asked, and some women actually thought, actually didn't really think about that, and what is cultural wave for our people. So I think that as a conversation, that's a really important one for have it, for women to think about what culture things is important to them through the pregnancy and birth, and also how they can actually then express that need to their providers so they can so they don't feel judged and they feel supported in having those needs met.
This summer today has a number of stakeholders. How did it come to be?
We've been running a series of birth summits across rural Queensland. That we've run five in Townsville, Cairns, Rockhampton, Mount Isa, and Toowoomba, and they've been quite successful in bringing all the people to the one place and actually giving them the latest evidence on the safety of services in rural areas. And so on the back of the success of those summits, obviously Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander services populations are high in the rural and remote areas as well, so each summit did address them, but it was also mainstream. So from that we thought, actually a summit specific to the needs of Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people, including the South sector, because they often get women in the Southeast sector often get forgotten when we talk about Aboriginal, because the rural and remote situation and disadvantage of often dominates the conversation. So this gives us an opportunity to get the needs of women living in the Southeast sector also discussed today. So I think a really great opportunity.
Talking about forgotten people, the roles of dads, sometimes that's sort of, even we as men, sometimes ignore or aren't too aware of our responsibilities. But that's another important area, the roles of dads.
It's a really important point, Tiger, that you raise, because, again, mainstream services hear these little bits about culture, and we hear that Aboriginal way is women's business, birth is women's business. And, yes, that's true, but that's just the birth process. And what we forget is actually men have a really, traditionally and contemporarily, men have a really important role in parenting and looking after that woman in pregnancy, and then the role of, obviously, as a dad to that little baby. And I did some research in Arnhem Land last year where it was beautiful to see the extended family's responsibility in growing up those kids. And we, as a service, we just concentrate too much on the mother and the child. They're seen as this dyad, whereas in Aboriginal way, it's actually a much bigger story. And I think too many men have been excluded. We have mums and bubs, just the language you use, mums and bubs clinics, and the baby room will be next to the women's room, which is away from the men's room. So there's all these subtle ways that health servers actually exclude men from making them feel really welcome and bringing the kids into care, into get health care. So I think, yeah, we need to look as part of this broad issue of how to support women and having babies is, okay, how do we make dads feel really comfortable in coming alongside their women and being involved in the pregnancy and then the birth and then obviously the parenting period?
Birthing on country, there's some real challenges out in remote communities, probably in rural communities, but especially remote communities like Cape York and places in Arnhem Land. Birthing on country is an important project.
Yeah, it's funny, and I'm sure Sue Kilday, as an earlier speaker, would have spoken quite articulately about this because she's worked in the area for many years. But I think there's a couple of things we have to think about is, what does birthing on country mean to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women of this state and this nation? And we can't have, you know, some people think it's you know, having a baby under a tree on the riverbank, and other people say, actually, no, it's just having my baby's name on the birth certificate. So we can't make assumptions about what this means to women, and it's got to come from the women, it's got to come from the community. So I think that again, there's some opportunities here today to actually ask the mob here, what is this word, and how does it mean to the community, and how Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women and families can actually own that title and be proud of that, what that means. And it doesn't mean traditional land. It doesn't mean the country that your ancestors come from. It's about identity and connection and having a proud voice in that space.
Yes, it opens up a big space, there's a lot in birthing on country. What does it mean? And you've touched on some of it there. It's just amazing. Well, we hope to see it continue on, birthing on country, and centres set up out in remote areas and stuff. So we'll have to watch this space, I suppose. Is there anything else you want to add?
No, thanks for coming. And I think, again, your program is a really great opportunity to get this story out to the people in the community. So I encourage everyone to have a think and jump on the line and Twitter and Facebook and whatever they do to spread the word that this is about Aboriginal people stepping up and claiming that space.
Great, Sue. Thanks very much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's Sue Krusky joining me today. And we're broadcasting from the Royal on the Park. It's a hotel facility in Brisbane, opposite the Botanical Gardens, down in Alice Street, I think the street is. And we are at the very first Brisbane's very first Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander birthing summit, highlighting the gap in pregnancy and birth outcomes for Indigenous women and babies, and bringing into focus the opportunity for collaborative and sustainable approaches to closing the gap. So it's great to see there's also a big mob of people here, all in different areas, but mainly health and stuff. Yes, welcome back to Let's Talk, broadcasting from the Royal on the Park here in Brisbane at the summit, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Birthing Summit. And as you've heard from previous guests, some interesting discussion taking place here, especially that birthing on country, which is good, as you heard the minister talk about also. My guest now is Jodie Curry, the chairperson of the Indigenous Perinatal Mortality Subcommittee. Jodie, welcome to the program. How are you?
Good, thanks, Tiger. How are you? Do you want me to hold that?
No.
Don't? Okay. Good morning.
Want to take control of things? You straight away going to grab the mic off me? Well, anyway, it's all right, Jodie. Now tell us your mob, your country.
I'm a Yukonbeer person. My country goes from the Logan to the Tweed River and out to McPherson Ranges. I have traditional connection across southeast Queensland. And I'm born and bred in Queensland. I spent a couple of years up in Cairns, up in far north Queensland, and I really enjoyed that. Hello to the mob up there. I love it there. I love your country. It's such a beautiful spot. These fellas are laughing here, you know. I keep telling these Brisbane blacks I'm going to go back there. But anyway, yes, good. It's good.
All in good time, Jodie. All in good time. It's some of us down here will refuse to let you go. But anyway, at the end of the day, we'll see where you end up. Now, tell me, you were at the Institute of the Urban Indigenous Health. What is that organisation?
We're the regional body for the four Aboriginal medical services across southeast Queensland. Our role is to improve access and health outcomes and data collection and spread of service delivery across all the way from prevention, early intervention around health through to chronic disease management. We run that through the Deadly Choices program, through our Work It Out program and also our Bubs Club program. So, yeah, that's what our role is. We've gone from four clinics in southeast Queensland to 13 clinics in the last 3 years. We have a population of 60,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people here, and looking for mob and for, you know, and for people listening, all listeners, there's challenges with everything that it is that we all need to do, you know, and government policy, whether or not, you know, it's neither here nor there, but that we're committed to closing the gap and how that we do that. We've had some great successes in southeast Queensland. It's a great tribute to non-Indigenous people and Indigenous people and service providers and clients as well to what we've been able to do in southeast Queensland. So it is still challenging and there is still things where we could do stuff better, and that's probably what today is about as well with the Birthing Summit, which we're very excited to be a part of. But, yeah, so we are kicking goals in southeast Queensland around closing the gap and, and as I said, there's still challenges around, you know, there's still high incarceration rates and suicide rates and all these other things, you know, that we struggle with and workforce development and a whole lot of things. But, yeah, we are doing well here and it's a tribute to our partners and our community. So, yeah, it's been good.
Well, tell us about the Indigenous Perinatal Mortality Subcommittee, which you are the chairperson of.
Yeah, Tiger, it's a committee, it's a ministerial legislative committee, which means that, you know, we provide reports into Parliament. The reality of it, and again, you know, I'd like to acknowledge certainly Minister Springborg around the birthing outcomes for all women, and I didn't get to hear him talk before, so I don't know what he was talking about, but certainly for our mob, we have high rates of infant mortality in Queensland. We have some of There's a report that, you know, will come out and shows some research around. We have, yeah, very, for the country as a whole, we have very high rates of infant mortality in Queensland. Also, and, you know, there's the, all the things around birth weights and smoking in pregnancy, drinking in drinking alcohol in pregnancy, poor diet, lots of different things. But really what it is we've got a group, the subcommittee, to feed up into the minister and into cabinet around what really is that data. We have limited understanding of the data and what are some of the outcomes, how we can actually improve some of the outcomes in relation to infant mortality rates. And again, you know, for the reality for families who lose children or lose mothers during pregnancy, it's a grief and a loss, and it's that words can't express. So we're trying to actually find out how we can improve those outcomes and make a difference for families and people, and even, you know, for families then after, if such a tragedy has happened, we as a community and we as families and you know, and as human beings as well, you know, it's a huge struggle. And so trying to actually put things in place that the service delivery system in hospitals and communities and GPs and others understand that better, so that we can actually support women and their families through that time.
Hmm? How long has this the Indigenous Perinatal Mortality Subcommittee been in place?
The last 12 months, and really we'll kick off early in the next year in a strong way. It's really been in the planning stages to try and sort of understand the data. And people will know, again, you know, and it has been because of the Closing the Gap stuff around actually Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and women in this case identifying. You know, in some cases in hospitals across Queensland, if the mother was a non-Indigenous woman, the child wouldn't necessarily be or wouldn't be identified as an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander child. So there's, you know, so there's some changes of things that needed to happen over the last 12 months to actually be able to start to really get some good data in and be able to analyse that. So we'll kick off next year. And again, you know, it is around birth weights. It is around how many antenatal visits people have had and what the outcome of that's been, and how we work in with Aboriginal medical services or other care providers outside of the hospital.
Jodie, to impact on some of those things like smoking, alcohol, drinking of alcohol and stuff, diets are very important to an expectant mum. It's income. It's the money in the household income that impacts on this. You know, we can say, yes, we've got to fix your diet up, you've got to stop smoking, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. But a lot of it comes down to that family income. How does that get changed?
Yeah, I think the issue around, you know, what is intergenerational endemic poverty, and that again then, you know, links into, and this is also what we're looking at, you know, the high rates of overrepresentation of Aboriginal babies, particularly in the child protection system. And again, to any families or anybody who's listening, you know, my absolute heart goes out to you. You know, it's a systematic issue and problem within the health system, within the child protection system, within the housing system, within the legal system, and who at the end of it is the biggest victim of it. And they are victims because they are babies, they are children, you know, it's them. And lots of things, and also, you know, for your non-Indigenous listeners, you know, the issue of endemic poverty, intergenerational endemic poverty, and then the outcomes that is what then causes these poor birthing outcomes. That what then causes the things around, you know, as I say, the incarceration rates are fresh in my mind at this point in time, because it's the thing, even the linkages between teenage pregnancy and the lifelong outcomes then for people. I was reading something the other day, you know, there's been some research out, and when I think about it, it makes sense. You know, half of the people who are in jails on, you know, have come from teenage pregnancies. Now, I don't mean to put any sort of negative connotation on the thing but, you know, it makes sense that, you know, it's the person's life experience at that point in time. It's their ability to be able to be well educated, or to be educated, you know, and to have a job and to be financially, all those things of poor education, work outcomes, those things, you know, all impact upon a person's from the second they're born, then through all their life, you know. So if we can hopefully try and put systems and real action in place. I was just saying inside before they got me to talk there. Now, we had the apology, and that was very significant, and we have the reconciliation action plans, and we have recognition of the Constitution and all these processes, I guess, for want of a better word. I see the summit today and the commitment by Minister Springborg to have this summit, and for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women particularly, it's a practical thing. We're having a conversation about practically what does it mean around Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander women birthing in what is a mainstream hospital, whether or not, you know, and where is it, and that's in country because this is Aboriginal land. So I'm really, for me, as I said, all processy stuff that they were all talking through or working through, I see the summit as a really practical way of us being able to say, how do we get the information out to our women about the data around infant mortality? And how do we get the information out to them to be able to say, if you can, you know, these are the things that you can do to hopefully reduce your risk of that? And it's a conversation that's not been had. So I'm hoping from the summit, I know from the summit and from the work that we're doing, that that will be the practical outcome. So,
Big job ahead of you, but it can be done, and it's great to see that approach where you're looking at practical implementation, practical outcomes. Jodie, thanks for joining us today. It's great to have you in here, and we'll talk again.
Lovely. Thank you, Tiger. Have a great day, everybody. See you.
Jodie Curry, Yugun Bear woman, and working over at IUIH, the Institute of Urban Indigenous Health. Now, get rid of all the papers, make room for Karina and Sarita. Tell us your mob, your country.
Yeah, I'm both Aboriginal and Torres Strait. My father's Murray Island man from the Torres Straits. He's the Sunset tribe there, well, clan. And my mum, she's she's the Kaliwada people, and they're originally from Thugminda, who now resides in Sherbourg.
All right. Karina Hogan, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Tell us your mob and country.
I'm also Aboriginal and Torres Strait, and my country is Bundjalung, and I'm from Brizzy.
All right. Sarita, was that little one of yours I was listening to here a while ago? Yeah? That's your first, or you've got big mob?
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you in the hospital? Where was the baby born? In the hospital here, Brisbane, or where?
Yeah, in the hospital.
Yeah. What was it like for you?
It was interesting. It was nerve-wracking. It was something that obviously I haven't experienced before, but it was good.
It wasn't that bad where you're going to say, no more kids, that one's enough, no more kids, or what? Or was it that bad?
I guess it was more the experience in the hospital that was quite an experience.
Tell us, what do you mean the experience in hospital?
Well, apparently to have an epidural was a 5-minute process. I had an epidural through for the cesarean, and there was a bit of an incident that had happened. What had happened was, like I said, it was a 5-minute process. Well, whilst I was in labour, the lady who does the specialist, she was a trainer. She didn't tell me she was a trainer. She didn't tell my partner she was a trainer. That 5-minute process became a 45-minute process. So I had to stay in one position while they would literally put the needle in my back for the epidural, pull it out, and then put it back in again, and then pull it out, and then put it back in again. And it was, you know, I was high. So I was, yeah, my partner was looking at me like, oh my God, you know, I can't believe you're going through that.
What do you put that down to? I still claim today that the health system in this country, the education system in this country, those big institutions are the most racist places. Today I still make this claim that they are the most racist places around. Do you put it down to the fact that you were a black woman? Do you put it down to, well, they just see so many people, I'm just another number? Where do you put that sort of experience? How do you reconcile it in your own mind? Why you experienced that with a trainer not divulging that they were a trainer and all this sort of stuff. How do you come to terms with that? How do you explain it to yourself?
I put it more down to the individual. She seemed very ignorant in regards to her profession. When my partner had realised, he said to our support person, why is it taking so long? And she said, well, it was supposed to be a 5-minute process. Then my partner asked, why has it taken it so long? Was she a trainer? my support person didn't know, so my partner asked that lady if she was a trainer, and she said she was, and he went off. We allowed to have trainee nurses in through the whole day, and it was from that time where he just said, no more trainees, we're having professionals, we're having legitimate workers in there. And it was from there that that we carried on, I guess. Yeah.
What would you like to see happen? Well, say you're 2 years, 3 years down the track, you and your partner decide to have another baby. What would you expect? What would you do on the next occasion? You're in the labour room. What would you be saying? What's your qualifications? Are you a trainer? You're a trainee? What's your qualifications? I mean, how would you avoid going through this traumatic experience?
It's funny you say that, because we're like that on a regular basis, you know. We want to know what everyone's status is like, you know. Yes. That's how we go with our own mob, you know. Your mob, where you're from, you know. What's your experience in this, you know. And in saying that now, I guess it really, for me personally, it does come down to I would stick to the Indigenous Child Health Service. Having that experience, and after having baby now and hearing experiences from other mothers, it definitely helps want to stand up and say, look, okay, fair enough, this is the westernised way, but we need that support to, you know, from the Indigenous health services or the maternity services to fill in for us, to speak for us on our behalf, as well as when... Like, it's different because, you know, compared to what it used to be back in the day to how it is now, it's very restricted, and it's according to their time frame, and it makes it harder for us because even though we're going through, as Indigenous women, we're going through this process, it's a spiritual thing for us, it's that connection for us, whereas when you're in a hospital, it's that time frame, it's according to their policy, and that's what makes it difficult.
Karina.
I was just going to say, I think, because I'm pregnant, I'm about to have my own baby. Hopefully I don't go through the same issues, but I don't think I will because... but what I like about what I'm doing with birthing in our community is that the martyr are coming out to aches. They come out to aches. And I know my midwife who works at the martyr, but... essentially they're coming out and they're coming to me, and I feel safe with that. I hope that it follows through. But I like the idea of it being a little bit more on, you know, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander terms, and being able, and I've gone to aches since I was literally born. Some of the midwives remember weighing me as a kid. And so I feel really comfortable there, you know, like, you know, they're my people, and I feel like they understand and they know where I am, where I'm at. So I think that that's really important.
So there needs to be more of that collaboration with our own mob and understanding our own mob, the cultural aspect of things.
Rather than trying to change a system that's so embedded and massive and big and whatever, them doing it our way in a sense, I guess. Yeah, and delivering it the way that we want. And I don't have a health background, but... I just, like, from my own personal experience as someone who's about to be a first-time mother, it's really scary. Like, even things like breastfeeding and SIDS, all that stuff, it scares me so much. But our antenatal classes, it's deadly. We all sit around and we all sit in a circle and we talk about what we want to talk about. And I have an Aboriginal liaison officer there supporting me. And I just don't think it would be the same if I didn't have that support.
Yeah, be very different.
I'm originally from Townsville, so I've been living in Brisbane for 9 years now. So majority of my family, the old women, my grandmothers and aunties, they weren't there for me. So Narama, who was the Indigenous Child Health Service that are in Caboolture, they were supporting me on that behalf, and it was really good. Like you said, I was... Every 5 minutes, hey, look, what's this? And it was really good because they were there throughout the whole journey, run up to birth.
That's what I think makes a difference, eh? Yeah, no, it's great. Ladies, we're running out of time. I've got another guest waiting. Sarita, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, too.
And let's hope your next experience, whenever it may be, is a whole lot better for you. Eh? All right. Thank you very much. And
We're doing a live broadcast from the Royal on the Park in Alice Street opposite the Botanical Gardens, and we're at the very first summit Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander birthing. Marianne Wobke joins me now. Marianne, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Tiger. Always a pleasure to be here.
It's always a pleasure to have you on as a guest too, by G.
Yes, thank you.
Tell us your mob, your country.
I was born on Wakka Wakka land, and my grandmother is from North Queensland. Her land was Yuri land. So, yeah, we're still piecing that all back together at the moment.
Now, you're a midwife?
I'm a midwife. I'm a registered nurse, and I'm currently working at the Murray School.
What's a registered nurse and a midwife doing in a school?
This is the question I've asked myself many times. And since my ancestors first turned up when I first started midwifery, I've pretty well let them run the show. So when I turned up at the Murray School, I thought they'd made a mistake. But 4 years down the track, I'm so profoundly grateful for the experience of being there. It's rounded off my midwifery beautifully because I've seen what a lot of contemporary birthing practices, like birthing off country, the influence it has immediately on our children. And so I'm confronted with that every day.
So birthing on country is an important part of life for our people?
I think so, very much. For Aboriginal people, it's a philosophy. It's so embedded into the psyche. There's really no explanation is needed. But for those of us who grew up influenced by the dominant Western myth, who are still under that spell, birthing on country is something that at the moment that it's not achievable for everybody. I'm listening to the stories of our two young women that were just sitting with you. That's a perfect example of birthing off country. You can be in the most sophisticated unit with the most exemplary mission statements and policies, but if the individual caring doesn't care because they haven't worked on their own issues, then you're off country.
Well, how important is it then for summits like this, the collaborations with the different agencies? How important is that in order to improve the situation for our families, especially expectant mums?
I think this is one of the most exciting things that I've ever been a part of, because as a midwife, I feel like we're actually at transition. You know, we've come through the labour and we're at the point of no return. And what I just spoke to the audience about is we need to influence the quality of what happens now. We are going to birth a new paradigm. There is no doubt about it. But as non-Indigenous people, if we're not able to reconcile our own egos, in a sense, if we're not able to get out of the way, then we'll just recreate the past again. This is an opportunity for us to step back and follow our Indigenous mob who already know how to do this. In a sense, there's nothing more to learn, but we need to get out of the way and let this happen now and follow that traditional wisdom that's been passed on generation after generation.
Yes, no, it's time that we were able to do some of these things on our terms, because it's always dominant culture terms. That's the biggest problem, and they've got these blockages they can't really communicate properly with, don't understand our ways.
That's right. This is why I was talking about perception. You can believe you're doing the right thing. This was the whole missionary dilemma. You know, people who are so well-meaning, but you don't know what you don't know until you know. And so anything that I do that involves the children, what I've learned many harsh lessons about humility. If we approach this with true humility, we'll be fine.
Well spoken, Marianne. You always give some value to this program. I should have you in as a co-host with me. But anyway, look, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Tiger. Always a pleasure.
It's news time. Join me tomorrow for Let's Talk. You have a great day.